Would you like to see the big guy, the skipper, the head honcho?
Good morning, Captain.
Good morning, Captain.
You're listening to Morning Joe with the CEO.
Good morning, Rhoda. It is Thursday, November 20th, currently 7:04 here in beautiful southern Spain. I am Petty Officer Dakota Knack, and it's my honor because it is Morning Joe with the CO. I'm here with our commanding officer, Captain Charles Shimlack. How are you doing today, sir?
Great. Thank you for asking. Good morning.
I'm excited to have you here. It's a bit chilly out, but I'm right in here. You're having some Joe.
That's right. Another brisk day and a good way to start your day.
Absolutely. And I'm just very excited because it's a jam-packed season. But I just want to ask, how was your Veterans Day?
It was good. Spent some time with some local veterans and celebrated the day and reflected on all of those veterans all around the world who have inspired us to be here today.
What does it mean to you, everybody that served before us? What comes to mind?
Well, I think it reminds me that every day we need to work as hard as we can to honor their legacy and to make sure we meet up to their standard.
Do you view Veterans Day differently? I mean, may I ask how long you've been in service?
I've been in service since 2001, and if you count the college days, as a member of the Midshipman Brigade in 1997. So quite a few years. It occurs to me I could have hung up the boots a few years ago, but you know, I'm honored to continue serving, and, you know, I think the highlight of my day is serving with the great people who continue to serve this nation.
I think each year changes my perspective, growth, just continuously, like, bolsters my strength towards Veterans Day and just gives praise to everybody before me and actively serving.
Well, and I think those veterans, you know, I think they have a good understanding of it, but, you know, many of us have a lot of inspiration through our families and neighbors and friends, and you know, this community has a active U.S. veteran population of over 680 people, so I think we can use their inspiration and, you know, tap into their expertise and kind of motivations for our nation and here in Spain, you know, working towards the mission and a common goal. So, you know, when I think of veterans, there's people in my life who continue to inspire me to work hard every day, and that includes my Uncle Mitch. He was in the Air Force, and my father-in-law, he was in the Army. So I even have nieces and nephews who have since left the service as MAs, as a matter of fact. So all of those people who've put in the time and effort over the years and inspire us every day.
Beautifully put, sir. And I think Veterans Day also is a good segue into the holiday season. I mean, it's Thursday, November 20th, which means 1 week away from today is Thanksgiving.
That's right.
Do you have any family coming to visit?
For Thanksgiving, we do not. We expect some family over the holidays, but I think this is a season to give thanks both to the veterans, but also our families who serve with us every day and have to make a lot of sacrifices while we're away or even while we're working hard, you know, every day. I know we have some guests here who have some shout outs, and if you'd like to introduce them.
Yeah.
Segue right into it.
We'll get right into it then. Yeah, we are. I'm honored to have two wonderful individuals from Public Works. We have from the Seabees, Commander Mike Eberhardt, and also our Public Works Officer, Mr. John Eichstadt. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
It's amazing. I know you guys have a big part in the community, especially the holidays coming up. I mean, Christmas season's big.
It's huge. Yeah, excited to spend it in Spain here this year.
Oh, are you new?
Yes. So I've been here about 6 months at this point.
How about you?
I've been here about two, I think, at this point. Matter of fact, I'm out there getting my household goods right now today after I leave this show, and we'll be doing that.
Well, I'm thankful for both of you to be here today, but I think there was something you wanted to...
Yes, sir. I wanted to give a special shout-out this morning. It's my triplets' birthday, so happy birthday to Colt, Hattie, and Charlie.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Love
you guys. Triplets, it's crazy. That's awesome.
It's busy times.
That's amazing. Then we're very excited to hear what's going on. Public Works, I know you guys have been incredibly busy, and we're going to take a quick little song break. And it's actually in honor of just this whole hour. We got Starship with We Built the City here on AFN Road of the Eagle, serving America's Best. Great song to get us into this hour with our Public Works team. And I also want to tell everyone I made a major blunder. We have Mr. John Eichstad. He is our Deputy Public Works Officer. And then from the CBP, they're both working with the CBP. We have Commander Mike Eberhardt, our Public Works Officer. I apologize for that.
No worries.
And, sir, I am excited to hear all the questions you're going to ask. This is going to be a riveting hour.
Of course. We see you every day, and I think more importantly, it's what we don't see. So, what can you tell us about public works? And more importantly, let's start with you, though. What brought you into this? What brought you here? What got you excited about public works? What gets you excited to be a CD?
Yes, sir. So, growing up around construction. My dad was always in construction. When I was younger, working highway construction, I was always had a big interest in engineering, and so always out building something, tree houses, and putting wood, you know, slapping 2x4s together, and just enjoy myself doing that. And so always interested in the construction side of things, and went to school to be a civil engineer and joined the Civil Engineer Corps, and have been enjoying it since.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. The stories that we have between us that are in public works are very similar. My path was more mechanical. I was always tearing things apart younger, then working as a mechanic, working on my grandfather's equipment, and then working in shops. And then, of course, I joined the Seabees way back in 1989, and then eventually did a 21-year career, and they transitioned me into the civil service. And public works is kind of like, I always look at us as the medical doctors of the infrastructure and facilities that you always call us when you need us, and then we're always there doing things in secret sometimes, and then when you turn on the lights, or turn on Christmas lights as it comes up to be, right? It happens, right? But I've always loved being a mechanic and fixing things and making things better, and so it just goes back to public works and trying to make things better.
It does. So we talked about being thankful, and I've got a lot of people who in my family who have been in the trades, who've done construction, side projects, being very mechanically inclined, oriented to build. And so you talked about some of your influences. You talked about your families. What do you think were... Then you also talked about working, I think, in your teen years earlier. You know, what were some of the most positive experiences you had that you can remember growing up that you thought, this is it, I can do this for the rest of my life?
Well, at 55, it feels like the rest of my life. I'll be honest with you, I just like the fact of being able to fix something that then delivers some form of joy or some form of comfort to those that we serve. A lot of times what we do is we go out there and we just think that we're swinging a hammer or turning a wrench. But in the end, the quality of life of the individuals that we impact is what brings me the joy and keeps me motivated to go to the end of my career doing this. And I think a lot of times that pie was formulated at a much younger age that I didn't realize, but now that I'm older, I definitely can appreciate it much more. And of course, being a vet, being a retired vet, and then serving the veteran community and the active duty community and seeing the fruits of that labor is the best thing in life.
Yeah, so, driving around as a kid, we all used to roll our eyes at my dad when he would say, we'd drive by something and he'd say, hey, I built that, or I was on the team that helped build that. And so, public works can be a thankless job. Nobody's happy when the toilet flushes and the lights turn on. But the other side of it, the big construction projects and stuff, is it's really cool to be able to have a hand in that and be driving around the whole installation and look at stuff and understand how it's operating and what role the public works team has in supporting that stuff. So,
yeah, I think it's impressive. I think it's super motivating to see the cranes around base, seeing the construction. I think there's a level of pride that, you can have both being part of the design, being part of the building, being part of the sustainment. My grandfather was part of construction growing up, and so we drive all around the south side of Chicago, and he would point out, he's like, I built that. And it just sticks in your psychology that if they can build it, I can build it too, and I can be part of that. And you know, my father was a machinist and my sister is a sheet metal worker. And, you know, we come from a long line of builders. And so it just gets ingrained that you can solve that problem, you know. You know, my mom's done a tremendous amount of carpentry and things inside the house that have renovated some buildings. And it's been pretty phenomenal. My uncles are into it. They've renovated whole homes and turned them into beautiful things. And you're right. People can take joy and pleasure in how you enhance a space, right? Sometimes that space enhancement is in the form of a $160 million Milcon project.
Yes, sir.
And a beautiful new, you know, port off facility that we could share with our Spanish allies. And I think we can get excited about that. And, you know, and you grow it and it becomes vital to our national security. And so you've not only built things, but you've built ideas and you've built a future and a legacy. When you were growing up, did you have any favorite toys that inspired you to get into this work?
Yeah, so Legos has been huge in my family. And luckily, my mom saved all of my Legos, and so now my kids have inherited all of those Legos. And so it's a constant game walking around the house trying not to step on them. But, yeah, many, many Lego sets around and playing with them and, you know, figuring out how to use them in different ways and build, you know, beyond just what's in the book. So
I think that's the key. You got to build beyond the book. You know, and then it builds resilience and toughness, because when those pieces aren't picked up, you learn consequences for your action and some discipline. So I think it's also good to reinforce, you know, cleaning up after yourself and,
absolutely,
you know, starting a job, coming up with the design phase, completing a job, and then most importantly, cleaning up after yourself with the professionalism that we expect out of everybody. And I appreciate that. So the role of education, we talked about. You know, there's formal education, there's informal education, there's on-the-job training, there's different things that you can learn experientially. Let's talk about your formal education and then segue into things that you've picked up over the years.
So, you know, the formal education part really started for me back in high school when I started going to, you know, in my high school we had trades. So I took carpentry, the electronics, the electrical, the mechanics, as part of my high school career, right? That was 4 years of my high school career, which a lot of people, you know, like, it's not part of high school. If the trade courses are done correctly at that stage, it really builds a foundation to get to your next level, which then I carried that into my military career, right? Then, of course, I went to CMA school down in Gulfport, Mississippi, which then built upon those foundations. And then I continued on and got my associates and bachelors with a mechanical background, and then I moved on to my master's in another field. But it all comes back down to the mechanics of, you know, stepping through each nut and bolt, each phase, each course, each assignment, and getting to the final product. But it's really helped me build the foundations to be a good deputy public works officer and to understand the roles of those that are out there repairing, fixing things every day and trying to solve the problem in the moment, instead of, you know, a lot of times these beautiful construction projects, we have a lot of time with them, we have stuff like that, which is great. A lot of parts of the public works are in the moment, no crap. We need the lights on, we need the sewer working. We need to get the ships out, right, and understanding those things through that formalized education, it was helped me really focus to the finer details.
Right on. How about you?
Yeah, so I went to Penn State University as a civil engineer, and then got my master's from Old Dominion in engineering management, and so very technical side of things, and just figuring out how to run larger engineering, like have that mindset in problem solving. But growing up, I worked from a young age at a farm supply shop, and so I started off just kind of stocking shelves as a little boy, and worked my way out to working as a mechanic in the shop. And it was an interesting place because people would always bring in, you know, whatever type of older equipment or broken piece of farm implement, and it really taught me a lot in figuring out, you know, how to fix the problem. And I taught myself a lot of the mechanic side of things, and so it was interesting, you know, applying that mentality of just figuring out how to get stuff running with what you had. And so I think that that goes a long ways, especially in the CBs and figuring out how to, you know, the can-do spirit and get things done. But then also in the public works side, it gives me a focus on just trying to solve the problem. And there's times for the bigger engineering solutions that obviously some of our more technical Milcon stuff requires, but then there's certain times when things just need to get fixed. And so I think all of that's built me kind of to where I am.
That's right. And I think every day you can say you're proud of your work because it's awesome, which leads us to a nice break.
Great segue. And what you guys do just blows my mind. I mean, I didn't have the opportunity. My school did not offer trades. So I just think that's crazy. And I'm excited to hear mention about how the lights stay on, water keeps running. We're going to hear about that mission. But as sir, you referenced, everything is awesome. Be right back after the song break. Everything is awesome. That was Everything is Awesome. Sir, that song was awesome. That's going to be stuck in my head for the rest of the day. So shout out to you. Wonderful way on this morning, Joe, with the CO. And we're here, the Public Works team, eager to learn how the Public Works mission happens here on base, sir.
Great. So everything is awesome because of what you do. And I hope that inspired everyone to have an awesome day.
Oh, it did.
Especially on their way. Shout out to a special somebody for the recommendation today. Let's talk about the nuts and bolts, as you say. What does a day in the life of a public works employee look like?
Wow. I guess I'll start there, sir. The biggest thing is that it's unpredictable. It is actually, you know, one minute you can be nice and calm, things are planned out, scoped out, and then you get a call from the captain, there's a water leak. And then all the resources Yes. and everything else changes to arrest that water leak, right? Because we know in the end it has second and third levels of effect that will cause more damage to infrastructure or even not provide water, drinkable, potable water to housing units. So I can say that is highly, highly productive day, but also highly unpredictable daily. Just when you think it's calm day, you know this better, just like the public works knows better. You know, you go in 7 o'clock, six, 7 o'clock in the morning, you're like, everything's planned out on your calendar, and then your calendar gets thrown out the window at 7:30. So, exciting. It's exciting and unpredictable. Sir?
Yeah, so I'd just add that we've got an incredible range of folks at Public Works, and all the way from, you know, janitorial staff, plumbers, electricians, all the way to the engineers and people, you know, planning out the future projects. And so everybody's job is, you know, critical but a little bit different. And so I think, like John said, you know, you come into the day thinking one thing and you got whatever problem you're working on or the standard day-to-day stuff that you're taking care of. And then, yeah, something can certainly come in out of left field and kind of change the direction of your day and your focus. And just it's all about tackling the problems, though, and solving things.
Tell us about how large is the public workforce on the installation?
Yes, sir. So we've got about 350 people. About 40 of it's active duty. About 30 GS, and then the rest are all local national employees.
I think working in the business, you know every day how important it is, the work that each person does. And I think what most of us would take for granted, because we just assume that the water is going to be clean, and we've expected a certain quality of life, right? And I think it's in the name, Public Works. You serve the public, you keep the lights on, you keep the water flowing. How hard is it to manage all of that?
Sir, so I think we've got a pretty incredible team here. We've got a lot of folks who have been here a long time and, you know, invested, kind of taking it on as more than just a day job and actually owning the stuff that they're responsible for. And, you know, so I think that they help to make it a lot easier than it could be. I think that, it comes down to trusting the individuals because you can't be everywhere at once. And so you gotta trust the individuals, the lower level leadership to take care of that stuff and really know their responsibilities and know how to solve those problems. John.
Yeah, and the technical knowledge that exists here because of our local national counterparts that have been here for decades, they truly know how to get to a resolution faster. And it's a collaboration piece between all the, you know, like we said, the military, the GS, and the local national workforce that's out there swinging the hammers, swinging the cranes, doing those things. And the fact of how efficient they are allows Rota to get there faster, which is, having just come from Washington, D.C., we see a lot of changes with personnel in positions, even in the trade positions locally. You don't get that here, so you can get to a resolution and a sound resolution, not a temporary fix, but a permanent fix faster, which is incredible. And it's incredible to see, because when you've been at another site where you have a lot of changeover of that type of manpower, you don't get to see that efficiency, but you get to see that here, and you have the reliability here. So both you and the PWO have that reliability. When it gets fixed, it's going to get fixed.
That's right. And I've spoken to a lot of the men and women who do a lot of the work, and their technical expertise, their commitment to the job, it's truly impressive. They're proud of the work, and I think it's something that if you are interested in the trades, if you're a young person out there, if you're looking to make a life transition, I'm a strong advocate for it. I think it's something to be proud of. You know, and it's something that for everyone else who works and is a beneficiary of the service, we can be proud in the work they do too, because it makes our community better. And I think driving around the installation, driving into the local communities where I see the sheer amount of effort and the hard work of everyone out there who's keeping the streets cleaned, the utilities running, it makes it a more pleasant experience for our families and our community. And I am thankful every day. And I hope all of you out there, you know, from me to you, thank you very much for all the work you do. And so, trouble tickets. When, how do we like trouble tickets?
Yeah. I love trouble tickets. And I'll be honest with you, it's the core to our business. And what I mean by that is that if your issues aren't inserted correctly, what ends up happening is everything becomes much more efficient, to include being able to prioritize the needs of the entire installation and the support commands and the customers. And so what it is that trouble tickets are really the key to our success. I'm not psychic, and so a lot of times what people think when we go out there and we look at something, that we absolutely know what the problem or how it started or anything like that. We really don't. We rely on those trouble tickets to give us that information. And so I personally, as a DPWO, will always ask, where's the trouble ticket? And if it's inducted the right way, injected the right way through a service call, through a trouble ticket, what ends up happening is that we can use the resources correctly, the limited resources we have correctly, in order to arrest those concerns. Sir?
Yeah, so we've got a lot of people, like we said, that are really good at solving problems, but it's really, really difficult for us to solve problems that we don't know about. And so the trouble ticket is kind of the method that we've got, to figure out what your problems are and take care of them, and start that work towards a solution.
Yeah, I think it was a trick question. You didn't get lulled by my trick. We do love trouble tickets. And what I love is everyone can be part of the team and make the day awesome, because if they drive around, my message to the listening audience is you can't assume that somebody else has it for action. Sure. Maybe you are the first person to have actually taken the time and the concern for your local community to write something up and get that system activated that's there to serve you to get something fixed, right? And we do have scheduled maintenance. We have periodic maintenance. And then, those things don't cover the natural life cycle, and sometimes things happen. Weather comes through, things break, windows, may fade early. So if you see something, say something. How do they do that?
So you work with your building monitors. Whatever facility you're in, there's a building monitor, building manager assigned to it that's kind of responsible for intaking all of that stuff and kind of keeping track of exactly as you said, sir, to make sure that if somebody else already put the ticket in, that we're not duplicating it and overwhelming the system with identifying the same problem repeatedly. So work with your building managers, and they're the ones who can work with our trouble desk and get the stuff submitted. So that's really the best way to take care of things.
So. Okay. So if you are a spouse, family member, visitor, you are on a ship, and you're driving around, and you see something, and you think, somebody ought to do something about that, who can they call?
See, this is where the numbers come in. And so what it is that instead of giving you bad numbers, we did put into the public affairs notice that goes out a actually trouble desk number that anybody can call. What it is that, of course, like the commander said, we will always like to, you know, have that person that's assigned to that area or space submit that so we can get back to them. But they can always call a trouble desk, and we have it 24/7, right? So it's not like on Saturday and Sunday there's a specific time that you have to call, or holidays there's nobody, right? And I'm appreciative of the CBs here that those are their watch standards after hours for those type of actions. We have a trouble desk number that you can absolutely call 24/7 to inject that. But building managers have a very big key. Very big key in that. Let me see if we can find that number during this show.
Well, I'd also say if you're driving around and you have nowhere else to go, but you know that something needs to be fixed, you can always submit an ICE comment. ICE comments, we will find the solution for you. And what I've realized as I came here and I was excited to join Team Rota is this is our community, our base, it's our house, and I want to be part of this team and one big happy house community. And with that, I'll turn it back to you.
You're on point today, sir. It is our house. We'll be right back after a song break. Morning Joe with the CEO is back, and it's been insightful. I'm amazed. I genuinely do not consider everyday aspects of life that are maintained and upkept by the public works team. So thank you for all that you do. Cannot emphasize that enough. I'm excited to hear about the future plans.
That's right. So I think anyone who's living, driving, or anywhere near Rota, maybe perhaps flying over, you'll see cranes, construction. We call it Milcon sometimes. What's going on?
Yes, sir. So we've got a whole lot of construction going on across the installation, some major, major projects. Some that are kind of all phases. So we've got some that are wrapping up in the next couple of months, and we'll be able to turn over to tenants to move into, expeditionary maintenance facility, in-transit munitions facility. We've got a couple that are wrapping up that are really increasing the capabilities of those that the warfighters that use Rota as their home base. And so I think that there's a lot of those going on and a lot of those wrapping up. Then we're continuing to look to the future and develop plans and Milcons that will be coming online and under construction in the next couple of years as well. And so I think with everybody recognizing the strategic importance of Rota, a lot of people are wanting to come here. And with that, they all have requirements, and requirements generally require infrastructure to support them. And so that's where we come in with figuring out what those requirements are and how we can help to support them, and then getting the projects in place to provide to them.
That's right. So ultimately building the best facilities to sustain the people, the fleet, the warfighters, to protect our equipment, refurbish our equipment, keep it maintained. I think those are all products of why we design, build, and need these new buildings. How hard is it to come up with a design? Talk us through how you design to final ribbon cutting a building.
Yes, sir. So the planning process can be a long process, and so it just takes a lot of input from the users, the people who will ultimately be living and working out of the facility. We need their input to fully flush out what the building is going to look like and how we can build it to fully support them. And so early on, input is critical, and working that through all of the budgeting cycles and everything else, and matching their requirements with the funding and the resources that are available, figuring out where it makes sense to put it on base, and then putting all the pieces together to get it out to a contractor and to hire a contractor to come in and actually build the facility. And then as we're working through the construction, you know, our team also manages all of the quality assurance and making sure that the contractors and the builders are meeting the what they said they would do and what we need them to do to get a good facility on the back end of it, sir.
So you're saying you don't personally choose what we build here?
Yes, sir. So, you know, Public Works doesn't usually generate the requirement. You know, we don't normally build facilities for the sake of building facilities. You know, we really build the buildings, the infrastructure, the facilities to support, like I said earlier, the warfighter, and that's what we're here for. That's what you know, our mission is to support everybody else that uses the installation, and I think it's critical that we work closely together. But yeah, certainly need the input from the user, sir.
Sir, I just think that the individuals that participate in these design conversations really don't understand how important they are. Many times what ends up happening, like I said, a door can be in the wrong place because of a general design, and that doesn't service the warfighter. And so them being present, involved, active is the key to getting the right type of facility for the warfighter. Many times a bay door, a simple bay door, garage door, somebody doesn't realize that they need a 20-foot bay door, and so we build one for 10 feet, right? So I think those little details of those involved in that conversation truly help excel the right type of facility. From a wall to a door to a studio, right, a recording studio, it's got to be laid out in accordance with their expertise, not what we think it should be.
That's right, and I'm glad you made that point, because that's what I wanted everyone to understand, is what gets a building built is a very big thought project. It starts from the nested national security strategy. What forces do we need to bring here? What do we need to sustain those forces? And then it starts necking down into individual units, what it takes to sustain those units, and then finally, what building do we physically need to support the fleet fighter and family? And so do not be angry with Public Works when something doesn't work, because I think you're right, and I've experienced this several times. You'll have a planning crew come through and they'll ask you, what do you need as the user? And sometimes people take for granted the fact that they are listening and they are hanging on every word to make sure that if you say you need a 8-foot square room, they will build you an 8-foot square room. So don't be mad when you actually needed 8.5 feet because you just swagged it and took a guess, right?
Sure.
I think sometimes the challenge is future planning. And so you have to be more considerate of not only what you have now, but potentially where you'll be in 10, 20, 30, or in some of the cases on this facility, you know, buildings that are 70 years old. And so to be future leaning is absolutely important and critical to, again, sustaining those dollars and using the resources the best as possible. Along the way, if someone decides this building doesn't fit my needs, what can they do about it?
Yeah, so again, back to that, the building manager is the critical person, and so I think we've got FMSs, facility management specialists, who are the public work side of that the tenants interact with, and able to bring in whatever changes in requirements. You know, the solution might not require a complete brand new facility, but you know, if you need to move a wall or shift something internally or you know, take on some smaller project, you got to work with your building managers and so really just highlight those requirements. And one other thing that I think is critical to the puzzle here that we're talking about is we are happy at the Public Works team to apply the engineering principles and thoughts and requirements to develop the solution. But yeah, absolutely, it takes the input from the user to bring up whatever that requirement is. And so yeah, just ask that you if you do have stuff that's changing, if you have a new mission or shift in something, to work with your building managers and highlight that up to us so that we're able to put the solution in place.
It's incredible, the whole process. It seems so difficult, but I know throughout that whole process, it's going to require a lot of tools, and we're going to have play a little bit of a game here. First time we're doing this on Morning Joe with the CO. This isn't a competition. You guys are a team. I'm going to play. I was sent 4 different sounds, and we're going to test it and see if you get it. I did this with my wife last night. She went. I gave her 2.5 out of 4. So I'm excited to see this. So I'm going to turn our mics off, play a sound, and then come back. And I'm excited to hear how you guys do. I know it's going to be perfect. All right. First sound is coming. You guys have unanimous answer on that one?
Yes.
Certainly think that's a jackhammer there.
Yeah, that was correct. One for one for the team. All right. Joe with CO. Going into number two. Do we have a final answer on that one? I know I heard a different variety of circular.
Yeah, so it's a circular saw.
I have no background in this. Answer I was provided was a miter saw.
Miter saw.
Does that count?
That's actually in a carpenter shop.
Upside down.
So we have miter saw.
Upside down circular saw.
On that one. Yeah. So we'll give that 2 points. Two for two. Next one. Are you guys ready for this one? This one's going to be
all
fun.
About the blade.
Yeah, that's good. We're going for our third sound. So what do we have on this one?
Is it a keyboard or is it the static sound of somebody welding?
No.
I think that was a keyboard. That's probably the more inside the office side of Public Works. So I think that was a keyboard.
Yeah. I've conferred with my team, and we're going to give you full point on that. That was Public Works writing an email. So three for three.
There you go.
Last one we have. We're talking offline. Final answer?
What do you think it is?
Well, I couldn't quite distinguish the tonalities of whether it was a wood saw or a hacksaw.
Hacksaw. Could be a hacksaw.
It's definitely a handsaw of some variety.
I have the answer was provided for me was wood sanding. So does that count?
Oh, wood sanding.
I think you need to redo your
sound bites
there.
I'll confer with my team. We'll get back for a review. So I guess right now there's only three answers that could have been provided. So three for three.
At least
until
I went with the wood.
Four is in dispute, so I want to say that's amazing, and everyone listening, I hope you all got that right, too.
We'll re-examine this. We've got some engineers on staff who can analyze the sound there.
Which makes me reflect back to when I did this with my wife. She was disputing the wood sanding as well. She was like, that's incorrect. But this has been an incredible time, Public Works team. I mean, any final remarks, you guys?
So I think there's a number you'd like to share.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Actually, sir, I would like to share. Thank you for bringing me back to that. And matter of fact, we are working with the PAO office to ensure that QR codes are getting out there, being published, putting on key points around the base. But the trouble desk number for Public Works, and this is during normal working hours. Of course, you can always reach out 727-2347. And when I say normal working hours, that's like from 7, 8 o'clock in the morning. I would say more like 8 o'clock in the morning to about 1700. And then, of course, we have our emergency number. We're looking at, this is a Spanish number because it goes to a Spanish cell phone. It goes 639-682-417. And then, of course, after normal working hours, it's 679-047-167. If you get with your current building manager, the housing office, they have all these numbers. You can call that representative directly. They will know who to contact directly to get you faster service. But let me repeat those numbers one more time, sir, so that everybody gets them, right? It's 727-2347 if you're on base, 639-682-417, or 679-047-167. Once again, we're working with the PAO's office to kind of get that QR code, that publication out there, so everybody can just use a QR scan and get right access right to Public Works so we can help you.
All right.
That is amazing. We're in the coastline. And shout out to the coastline as well. This has been amazing. You guys did amazing on the quiz, and you've been just gave me so much more appreciation. I already had vast amount of appreciation and gratitude for what Public Works does.
Bringing projects to life every day.
Yeah, just opens your eyes to what's seen, what's not seen. And then, sir, currently it is 7:54. I was going to ask, we do updates, and then we have the perfect song to close out the show. I was wondering, with some installation updates, there's a lot coming in the holiday season.
All right, so a couple key highlights for today. We have the MWR Turkey Trot That's going to be a 5K fun run with a chance to win your turkey for Thanksgiving Wednesday, November 26th at 4:30 p.m. Free to participate. Sign ups at the fitness center. We have Thanksgiving meal at the galley. I saw some questions on Facebook about that. I do read your comments. So if you want to enjoy a huge Thanksgiving meal with the mess, without the mess, our galley is ready to serve you this Thanksgiving day. Holiday, or the hours are going to be 11:30 to 13:30, active duty personnel and their families, 13:30 to 1500, active duty personnel, DOD ID card holders with base access, retirees and their families. Finally, 1500 to 1700, local national employees. Price, $11.55 for all customers E5 and senior, $8.55 for all customers E4 and junior and their guests. Also, cashless. Finally, MWR Winter Wonderland. It's back this year. Enjoy live music, carnival rides, train rides, arts, crafts, and of course, a visit from Santa. Saturday, December 6th at El Patio Complex. We'll have carnival ride wristbands, which are $7 on presale. Head to the Liberty Center to buy one or more for more information. For more upcoming MWR events, pick up a copy of Vamos magazine. See you around the installation, Team Rota.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. It's been a wonderful morning, Joe, with the CO. I just want to say, once again, thank you to Commander Ebhart. I'm watching. And then Mr. John Eichstad. It's just been amazing. I'm stuttering on my words because I'm just in complete awe of everything you guys do. And from the whole community to the local counterparts that you work with, thank you so much for everything you do. Sir, thank you for everything you do in this command.
Thank you.
And it's just a perfect way to close out with Morning Joe with the CO, especially with what we've been discussing today. We've got some evanescence with Bring Me to Life here on AFN Road of the Eagle, serving America's best.